Kickstarter podcast number 4, and this week we're doing an interview with the staff of Central Surrey, which is one of the first large-scale providers to turn into a social enterprise in the NHS. And as we start the podcast, we'll let all the staff introduce themselves.
Hello, Geraint. I'm Dave Dawes, Director of Entrepreneurses.
I'm Julie Parsons. I manage district nurses in Central Surrey Health.
I'm Ro Lavender. I help people to become more in Central Surrey Health.
How we're all laughing because we've just done one of our little networking events. So everyone's having a practice now.
I'm Julie Cohen. I'm a non-exec for Central Surrey Health.
I'm Tricia McGregor, Joint Managing Director.
I'm Jan Romney, Senior Administrator.
Brilliant. And the purpose of this exercise is really for people to kind of learn some of the lessons from Central Surrey. And as people may be aware, it's certainly the biggest kind of NHS into social enterprise model. It's been going for a year now. We just thought this would be a nice opportunity over some coffee and some very lovely bickies. Just to kind of talk about, I have eaten them, especially the coconut macaroons. just to have really a conversation about some of the lessons learned. So for people thinking of going down that journey. And now it all goes quiet. So would it be useful if we just kind of outline the journey, really, for people? When did it first start? Was it kind of you and Joe? Or?
I think it probably goes right back to the autumn of 2005. When there was a sort of thought that the PCT might reorganise itself a bit differently in response to practice-based commissioning and the suggestion that the provider services could be split out, perhaps even down to GP practice level, and that senior professional leadership wasn't needed. And there's quite a lot of concern about that in the organisation generally. And so when we raised those concerns, the gauntlet was laid in the challenge of, if you think you can do it better, then come up with the ideas. And so
it's always
thinking.
A dangerous thing to say to an entrepreneur.
Well, you think
absolutely.
You can do
it. Yeah.
So we did. That's when we started thinking about, okay, how could we do it better and differently? Mm. And that's when Joe and I started working with a senior team of people, just beginning to think through, what does that mean? Blank piece of paper in front of us.
Mm. So when did it sort of start to kick that this might work? I mean, I might be wrong, but I always kind of have these ideas, you have these discussions, and people go, that's never going to work. Because at some point people must have gone, this could work, and ministers and civil servants stuff went, we could do this.
I think in that early part of the first phase, when we were doing our thinking, in the first few months, we were exploring different options and quickly came to this kind of model. And I think as we started to talk with other people in the organisation and share the ideas, there was just a groundswell of, this has got possibilities. And as you start to talk to the Department of Health and others, everyone doesn't say no.
Right.
They don't necessarily say yes, but they say, that might be an option. And so it just kind of crept along and gained momentum quite slowly. I don't think there was a day or a week when we would say, that's it, we know it can happen. It just continued to move, didn't it, over a slow period of kind of, gaining momentum.
I think once you actually start to think about social enterprise and you meet different organisations who are social enterprises, you feel that their values do fit very well with the sort of professionals that work in the NHS. And I think that really added the momentum as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Was that starting to connect into the social enterprise people?
Mm. I can remember it being quite a challenge because none of us were running services. And Chish and Joe were sort of going, coming back with ideas, and we were sharing and working through in quite some detail. But we had to suddenly learn new words, new language, and pick up, what is social enterprise, what is co-ownership? Mm. So if we move into a different organisation, would we be unfaithful to our values, or would we be enhancing our values? And so for several months, it was really a steep learning curve for all of us. It was in a very exciting time. And I think the value was actually processing this information together, reading, talking, debating, arguing, and seeing probably about 20 people just move to come to a much more cohesive group and say, yes, if this is an opportunity, we are going to take it and we're going to do it together.
Because we had to change our whole way of thinking. As nurses, we were just brought up that we came to work, we went out, we looked after our patients. And all of a sudden, everything totally changed. We had to think about what we were actually doing for all these patients, what we were delivering, how much it cost. That was something we never, ever thought about finance. So it was really, really different, wasn't it?
That must have been weird for some staff.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, But the best will in the world, the best direction, are people going, oh, I don't like this, and this must be...
Well, at the end, the nurses on the ground who delivered the care, all they were bothered about was still being able to deliver the care to patients. And in fact, even to this day, you will still get some nurses, and all they want to do is deliver the care to the patients. They don't, not interested in how much it costs and how many...
Well, what model we might be
exactly.
discussing.
Yeah. They just want to come to work and deliver the best care possible. Mm.
I guess one of the things that was important, though, in our journey was that that was the question we always asked ourselves in the changing NHS, and as things vary and alter, where can we be in the best place to still provide the best care for our patients? And that did keep quite a strong focus on that's what we're
that
here
was
to
central,
do.
Wasn't it,
that has to
through.
Be central. Because there's a lot of other change going on around us, wasn't there? Although we were trying to come up with something very different. Commissioning a patient-led NHS, you know, was around, there was all the debate about were PCTs going to keep their provider arms or not, so there was all the changes in practice-based commissioning, so there was a lot of change anyway happening, so there was a lot of uncertainty even if we did nothing, so we were probably adding another layer of uncertainty but trying to say actually this is about bringing some control into our lives and trying to take some control of our destiny.
And that
for
was
us and our patients,
wasn't it, having this sort of the government policy come out at a time when we were exploring models and realizing that maybe some of the things we were thinking of were fitting with the government policy, and then realizing that actually the government wanted us or other groups to put the detail around the policy. So when you go back and say right, talk about how this might be, the question always came back to us, fill in the detail, tell us how it might work. So that was kind of part of me at quite a sort of high level, which was incredible, really.
So when did it all go live? Was it this?
We actually went live on the 1st of October 2006. So actually the journey must have begun autumn 2004, because it took us that long to get through everything.
This case was June 2004.
Okay.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So we have various stages of...
It's Alzheimer's, isn't it, where your short-term memory goes...
It is, yeah.
That's
important.
It certainly was a long journey, and I think it was very much an evolving journey. It did take quite a long time for us to put it all together and get the model... Right, you know, co-ownership came to us partway through that thinking, and it was the result of just contacts. Again, somebody mentions it. In fact, I think it was you, Ginny, who'd spoken to Joe about co-ownership and models. We'd obviously knew a little bit about it from John Lewis.
Do you want to explain that to people that aren't familiar with co-ownership?
Well, co-owned companies are companies where all or many of the individuals that work in that organisation own a share of the business, and there are various different models and types, which probably we won't go into now in detail, but the principle of having a stake in the business and owning part of it, the most familiar model would be John Lewis, where people recognise that all the staff that work there are partners in the business. And I think we had cold called a company up in London who were a co-owned business and thought, well, let's see if we can apply any of this to health, because we know we've got a very dynamic group of staff who always want to be involved, very passionate. So we thought, well, if we can harness that better. And Joe rang them up and just spoke to the receptionist and said, well, look, I need some more information about co-ownership. Could you put me through to somebody who could help? And this dear receptionist said, well, of course, I'm a co-owner. What would you like to know?
Oh, that's fantastic.
And that was a real moment for us. If we could bring that feeling to, you know, 800 people providing healthcare, we could achieve something. Yeah.
So all the 800 staff are shareholders
have a one penny share in the business.
Yep. So how did they sort of react to that? Because it must be... Because at one level, it's great. You're saying to people, you've now got ownership. But some people must have thought, what on earth is that about? And, you know, the whole privatising the NHS spectrum and things. And, you know, some people get kind of the weird wrong end of the stick. So what was the sort of reaction?
It varied, didn't it?
I think the first reaction is, oh, what are we going to get from this then when we sell our shares?
And do you want the penny now?
Exactly.
My impression was it was a real sort of ebb and flow that we discussed it. Some people caught that. And then 3 months later, you talked to the same people and they'd changed their opinion. And then, so there was, it was very interesting to actually step back and analyse it, because it was just very variable across the whole time. So I think now...
It's when people have had a chance to go to their pub with a mate, yes, have a coffee and go, mm-hmm, what's all this about?
Yeah. Which is really important to keep articulating, discussing it, debating it, so people have evidence and facts about what co-ownership could mean for the patients and could mean for them as workers, really.
And there was a huge angst, wasn't there, about moving from the NHS?
Yes.
And then so it was actually trying to make the co-ownership and the social enterprise side as attractive as possible,
yeah,
in order to make that very emotional move from the NHS into a new business. Yeah. Which
I think
tough one.
Where we were coming from as well, the fact that there was so much deficit in the PCT that we were in, and I think we were able to say to people, we'll be in control of our own finances. I think that made a lot of difference to me, certainly, knowing that we wouldn't be going into a company that was minus thousands and millions of pounds, and we'd have control of our own money. Mm. And obviously, we're still struggling with finances. That's the way I see it sometimes. You know, we're not enough nurses on the ground. Mm. But we know we can make it better. Mm. We're not. You still hear of the PCTs being in all this financial trouble.
Yeah. And it's funny, when I go around the country, it seems to be one of the biggest drivers for social enterprise is to actually have that control of your own destiny and to be making decisions that affect you. It's a really big thing for most people. You know, not particularly the money, the structural stuff, but it's like, actually, this is our destiny and here's what we're going to do. Mm.
And we can change how we do things.
Right.
And I think that's been something else, especially in nursing. For years, you just go out and do the patients, but now we're actually encouraging people to think how they can change the service to provide a better service. And not just come in to work and pick up the messages and go out and do the patient, but just, and with the new IT system, hopefully as well, that'll make a lot of difference to how we work.
Yeah.
So how does the kind of structure of the co-ownership model work here then, is it?
Well, we have an elected body called The Voice.
Okay.
And we're broken up into 9 geographical areas. And then all the co-owners can vote a member onto The Voice. And I'm the non-exec facilitator between the Voice representative body and the board.
Right.
And I think
so the board, just to go back, so the board's got, how's the board set up?
What, the Voice board or the board?
Oh, both really, just so people get it right.
Okay, so there's a Voice.
So the Voice board is elected people around the geographic area,
Okay. And me as the
non-exec.
Yeah, non-exec. And then obviously we've got a normal board with exec directors and non-exec directors. The Voice.
And just to match it, the non-execs is kind of the sort of apply to the appointments commission type. That.
No.
Is that the usual route for? Okay.
No, because we're an independent company.
Okay.
We elect our.
Oh, so you advertise for them and appoint it out.
We
occupy this strange space known as the NHS family.
Yes. Yeah.
So I suppose we've tried to, I think we've succeeded in keeping the best bits of the NHS, but bringing in this can-do culture of business.
Okay.
So we do reside in this middle ground, very much like GP practices, where. We receive NHS benefits, we use the NHS logo, we use the NHS mail, so we're very much part of the NHS family, the services we provide at NHS services. But we are legally a company limited by shares and therefore are free to appoint our own board members and do how we want to do as a separate company.
So what kind of decisions then, I suppose, just to get a feel, kind of go to the Voice? Because obviously you can't do all of the day-to-day decisions, and you've got the role of the board. So if I was at a Voice meeting, what kind of things would we be?
Well, what you're looking at, to me, what we're looking at for the Voice is actually to bring the co-owner's voice to the board.
Right.
So there are certain areas, particularly as regards sort of culture, and if as a board we want to broaden the discussion about decisions that will reflect different values, then we take them particularly to the Voice.
Okay.
And you get a different type of discussion than through the management route, because obviously one has broader discussion with managers as well. But because you've got people who are coming from different layers within the organisation, you have a different type of discussion. And hopefully you're reflecting, I think, the culture of the co-owners more in the voice discussion than perhaps you would do in the management discussion.
Does it feel like the, you know, with the foundation trusts and the staff, well, the staff governors, I think.
Maybe. Yeah.
Does it feel like, I mean, I don't know if you've been to any of those or... When I've spoken to people at that, they talk about some of the similar. You get people at different levels talking about it, and there's the relationship between them and the board. And
I think a lot of, in all honesty, I think a lot of good organisations do similar things. Right. Because if you go back a long time in the NHS, you used to have the professional bodies, didn't you, that advise the board members. And that was made up of all people from all different areas. So actually good organisations have always done that sort of thing. To me, the difference with The Voice is that because we're a co-owned company, the co-owners have a right to have that. Okay. And that's within our terms of reference.
It's, you know, it's in our articles of association. Okay, so it's actually written into our constitution that that's how we behave. Yeah. So it's a very core part of our business. Right. It's not a kind of a luxury add-on if we want to.
Right.
It's part of our being.
Yeah.
I mean, I see The Voice and co-ownership as working at two levels, really. One is at the strategic level, so part of The Voice's constitution is to contribute to the long-term success of the organisation by contributing their views and being part of our the development of our long-term strategy. But it's also about feeling different on the ground, isn't it? It's about trying to get a sense of, yes, I can see where I fit in and I have a say in this organisation.
Right.
And that's quite a tricky balance.
Very
because you can't have everybody making all the decisions all the time together, because you grind to a halt. We often refer to John Lewis's kind of motto of co-owned but not co-run. And it's about the other phrase that they use, which I think is very helpful, is about we're all equal, but some of us have different jobs and therefore different responsibilities. And it is a tension, I think, and it is very much a journey. And John Lewis, who've been very helpful and supportive to us, as have the Employee Ownership Association, would say that even if you've been running a co-owned company for years, it's still a journey. It's always a journey about how you make that real. And of course,
and particularly around size as well. I mean, as
some,
there's some really interesting models in the third world where they say this works really well up to about 10 villages. Yes. And then the model has to change because, you know.
Interestingly, in co-ownership, and if you look at the membership of the Employee Ownership Association, you've got companies of 5 or 6 people, and John Lewis with its
huge,
seems to cross all kind of types of company and all size of company, but we're the first pure kind of health organisation of its kind. Yeah. So
so if someone was looking, because I mean, I probably talk to a lot of people that are kind of looking at, is that model they want to go down? What are some of the big lessons? You don't have to talk about anything that went disastrously wrong. What's the stuff that you probably wouldn't do quite that way again? Or what were the big bits of advice you'd give to people looking to go down that journey?
I would reiterate actually just what Tricia said. Is that, and John Lewis has said it repeatedly, is that it is a journey. And actually everybody's journey is different. So don't think that you can look elsewhere. And you have to accept that because it's a journey, you won't have everything in place straight away.
Yeah.
And certainly with The Voice, I think our expectation of what The Voice was going to do at the beginning has had to be modified, because you forget that the people who are elected aren't working at strategic level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of development that needs to be done, and a lot of education across the board. And how does The Voice interact with managers? How does it interact with staff side? Because there are some crossovers, and what you've got to make sure is it's all complementary rather than people treading on each other's toes.
Yeah.
And that takes a long time, and probably goes on forever, quite frankly. That's a big one for me.
Mm. Not making assumptions about what we mean, I think. You know, some of us spent a long time talking about some of the conceptual stuff, and even between us, what we assume is a social enterprise, what we assume co-ownership means, we've had to go, actually, I think we're not talking the same language. So it's finding creative ways to share that message, to check when we're having a conversation, what that actually means for both of us, which I suppose isn't unique to us, but I think it's come into such focus because we've changed language, changed concepts and done new things. So to avoid misunderstanding, to constantly say, just what do you mean by that?
And tease out values.
Values
really important.
Yeah.
Because again, people will say they had NHS values, but actually
what does NHS values mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you get some interesting conversations with people when they talk about NHS values in the third sector, and I use hospices as an example. Because hospices have NHS values, but it's not in the NHS.
I think that was one of the challenges, to get the people who are working on the ground to understand everything. Yeah. And even a year down the line, some of them still think they were employed by the NHS.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult to... They're not always listening.
Yeah.
They might be going to the meetings, but they're not always listening. And they're hearing something that you're not telling them.
Yeah.
I think this was one of the biggest challenges. I mean, even myself, 6 months down the line, there was something I couldn't understand. And I thought it meant one thing, but in fact it meant something else. I can't think what it is now. But it is a challenge, and it is change, and just changing itself. People...
I still meet the odd GP who talks about FHSAs.
And
I go, they haven't existed for over 10 years.
But I think it's also quite easy for us to be quite critical of our journey, and because we're still in the thick of doing a lot of work that's really progressing the organisation. But actually, if we stop and think, okay, turn the clock back to the whole year that we've been through, and we actually think about what has changed, a huge amount has changed, and we're starting to take that for granted, that it's become our normal culture, and it's quite a long way from other people's cultures now. I mean, it's lovely when a co-owner comes to me, or I'll just bump into somebody in a corridor and they'll say, well, do you know, I've been to a meeting and I said about this, and I was talking about the importance of customers, and everyone else looked strangely at me, and I thought, gosh, we really moved on, because I was able to tell them all the work we're doing about, you know, being customer facing and understanding your customer, and you think, yes, we have moved on, you know, and that's moving through the organisation.
I think that's a good point. I think, and one bit of work that Jan's involved in, is leading the clinic coordinators. So actually the people who are the ambassadors of the organisation, to resource them, support them, and some of the innovative ideas we've had about that. So rather than just being clinicians, it's actually who are these people that support services like finance, and making sure they also are very much embracing the co-ownership and they're valued, because often we just use them to get the job done. And there has been some changes around that, hasn't there, Jan?
Tremendous changes. And I think also from the admin point of view, taking on some of the challenges of Central Surrey Health to go over to various issues like NHS logistics, we had terrible trouble setting up an account with them because they didn't know who we were, what we were, were we NHS, were we private? And it was a real challenge to sort out some of these issues. And now we've done that, we're now moving on to the corporate image, which is what Rowena was meaning about clinic coordinators, to raise their awareness within the actual company itself and to our clients, our customers. You know, so that when they walk into one of our premises, they can immediately see who Central Surrey Health is. I mean, all right, there's a notice, there's a logo on the outside, but when you go in, we're trying really hard to raise awareness of who we are, and we're also... There's a refurbishment programme, isn't there, which again comes into corporate image. So we're trying to portray that corporate image as well.
How do you think the kind of public and the local community, I mean, do you think they just think, oh, this is another NHS reorganisation, or how have they kind of engaged? Because I always think it's difficult. We imagine that people out there are keeping on top of it, but...
I'm not sure that the majority of people fully understand that there's been a difference. They might have seen a logo change. I think unless they're friends and family of those who are employees, I think a lot of people still think it's NHS PCT. They didn't even get PCT, really.
Yeah.
And in one sense, part of me doesn't mind about that, as long as individual interaction with a clinic coordinator, a district nurse, a health visitor, a therapist is of a high quality and has the outcome that individual needs. And if they then find out Central Surrey delivered that, that's fine.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely key.
That was part one of the Central Surrey interview. And if you want to catch part two, that will be broadcast in podcast number 6. Well, thank you for listening. This was Firestarter, the UK's first podcast for social enterprises in health. And you can find more on our website at entrepreneurses.net. That's entrepreneurses.net.
My name's been Dave Dawes, and the music's Fire Dance by DJ Booley through a Creative Commons license, which you can find out more on the website. Hope to see you next week. Bye.